Okay. The Seder begins with the Parsha of Nedarim. And there's a big question whether making a nether is a positive thing or a negative thing. Because on the one hand, the Gemara says, Tov, Misha, Shavot, Tidor, Misha, Tidor, better you shouldn't make any Nedarim. And however, if you make it, then fulfill it. And another opinion is in the Gemara that it's better not to make a nether. Whoever makes a nether is like he built a bama to sacrifice his own personal altar when it's usher to do that. So it's something that's not proper. And when you when you fulfill the nether, it's like you made a carbon on it. So that means even fulfilling the nether is not proper. So it seems like the first opinion says that making a nether is in theory a good thing, except you have to make sure that you keep it. Because if you don't keep it, then it's worse than not making it altogether. And the other opinion says even if you keep a nether, nedarim are not a positive thing. That. But that's okay. That's not here. The Gemara doesn't say though that because he made a nether. Okay. Basically, there's a Tosfos that says the following. Just like we find that there are certain things that are not good in general, but under certain circumstances are the lesser of two evils. For instance, Tosfos gives an example. You don't fast on Shabbos. Okay? Not about a fast on Shabbos. People press you before you get out. We used to say that the barbed wire and matatio was keep people in. So it's also the fast on Shabbos. On the other hand, a person has a bad dream that really bothers him. So the best way to deal with a bad dream, once explained why, we're not going to go into it now, is to fast on the day that you have the dream. So if you have a dream Friday night, you fast all Shabbos. And then you have to fast again on Sunday to make up for fasting on Shabbos. So which is it? Is it okay to fast? Not okay. The answer is okay, but it's like the lesser of two evils. Better to fast and get rid of the dream, because otherwise it's really going to destroy your Shabbos, than not to fast, right, and worry about it the whole Shabbos or whatever. So the fasting is the lesser of two evils, but still not 100% good. It's only good in this situation as the lesser of two evils. So same thing says that a nether, under normal circumstances, a person shouldn't make nedarim. He should try to do whatever he has to do properly. But if he knows that if he doesn't make a nether, it's going to lead him to do things that are wrong, worse, okay? For instance, a person has a hearty appetite, and if he doesn't control his eat, trade for things. Okay, he knows. But if he makes a nether only to eat bread and cake, right, then he'll be more careful and he'll be able to control himself and not eat trade. So it's not a positive thing to make a nether, but under the circumstances, it's better to make the nether and keep it than to end up eating trade. So it's a lesser of two evils under those circumstances. So a person needs the nether as an aid to fight his Yetzer Hara, right? There the nether is not an ideal thing to do, but under the circumstances, it's okay. Well, you don't need it for that, then better not to make a nether. What do you have to make the dorim for? Right? Okay, that's the nether. Then there is the parasha of Miskaven Lecho Basar Chazir, the also Biyodo Basar Klev, which we spoke about. Says that a woman makes a nether, okay? And she makes a nether, she's not going to eat chocolate cake, no cake. And 2 weeks go by, and she holds to her nether. Unbeknownst to her, the day she made the nether, her husband heard her make the nether. And that day, he was made for the nether. He obliterated it. He didn't tell her, though. Okay, all he has to do is hear the nether and say, Mufar. She doesn't have to know about it. Doesn't have to be in her presence. So the nether is no nether. But she thinks she has a nether. 2 weeks after the nether, she breaks down. She can't control herself. She swallows a chocolate cake whole. So she really feels terrible, physically and spiritually. And she calls her husband. She says, I got to tell you, I did something terrible today. 2 weeks ago, I made a nether. I'm not going to eat cake. And today, I swallowed a whole cake. The husband says, don't feel so bad. I was made for the nether. You never had a nether. So it was 100% okay to eat the cake. The nether was bucket. So the Torah says, Isha Hafiram, even though her husband annulled the nether, nullified the nether, Vashem Yislachla, but she needs God to forgive her. From there we learn, the Skaven Lecho Basar Chazir, person intended to eat chazir, but by mistake he ate kosher. Okay, he walked into a trefa restaurant, ordered chazir, and happened to be that day, they got in a whole shipment of kosher meat, and they served it to him on disposable things, and it was 100% galat kosher. They didn't know. And then he finds out that what he ate was kosher, he still has to do tshuva, because he intended to eat trefa. Now, even though normally we say that when a person intends to do something wrong, but doesn't end up doing it, that he doesn't get punished for the intention, that's called machshava ro'a, that's because HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives the person the benefit of the doubt that he wouldn't have done the thing had it come to fruition. For instance, person goes into a restaurant, orders a tray for steak, and the restaurant, what's it called, between the time that he makes his order and the waiter brings it, burns down completely, right? There's a pigua. No, he doesn't get the steak. Walks out okay, but no steak. He won't get punished for ordering the steak and having intention to eat it, even though the reason he didn't eat it was circumstances beyond his control. The Rebbeinu gives him the benefit of the doubt. When it comes to our free choice, God deals with us as if he doesn't know. And therefore he can give us the benefit of the doubt. And he says, even if they would have served him the steak, he probably would have changed his mind. Okay. But if there's no reason to give him benefit of the doubt, for instance, he's done the sin three times. Oh, twice already. Twice. Even Shavara Adamadeira Vishamaba, Nasus look at it. And now it's the third time he's doing it. There's no reason to assume that he wouldn't have carried it through had it not been that the restaurant blew up. So now he's going to get punished for the third time. Similarly, in the case where he ate what he thought was straight, but it turned out to be kosher, there's no benefit of the doubt. He ate it. He thought it was straight. That's the end. There's no benefit of the doubt that maybe would have changed his mind. He ate it and he thought it was straight. That's the end of the whole thing. So therefore, he gets punished for that. The reason being that even though he didn't eat trait, so it's not going to make an effect on him. The Aveira has a bad effect on the person. But that's not going to be because you ate kosher. But you intended to eat trait, you're going to get punished because you intended to rebel against God. That's part of the Aveira where you're rebelling against the king, applies even where you made a mistake and thought you were rebelling. But the part of the Aveira where the Aveira itself is an intrinsic negative, that doesn't apply since you didn't eat the trait, you ate kosher. So that's the idea of Niskaven Lechol Basar Chazir. There's a medrash that says that when Rabbi Akiva would come to this pasuk, he would cry. So they asked, why Dafka Rabbi Akiva? Right? You know, if you're going to get punished even for intending to do something bad, so something to cry about. But why Dafka Rabbi Akiva? So I heard this in the name of Rabbi David Kronglass, who was the Mashgiach in Ner Yisrael in Baltimore many years ago. He's no longer alive. Zechut Tzadik Livracha. But subsequent to that, I saw that others say it also before him. But in any case, I heard it in his name, so I'm going to say it his name. He said like this. He said Rabbi Akiva was one of the Asara Harugei Malchus. The Asara Harugei Malchus, according to some, was a kapara for Mechiras Yosef. Now, when the brothers came to Yosef and they asked him for Mechila, forgive us, Yosef said to them, I don't need to forgive you. You don't need any Mechila. Because even though you intended for the bad, God made it work out for the good. Okay, but the horror Yosef was wrong. Because Niskaven Lechol Basar Chazir, if you intend to do something wrong and it works out for the right, you still need kapara. So had Yosef known this pasuk, that if you intend bad, but it works out for the good, you still need kapara, he would have been mochel his brothers. He wouldn't have told them, you don't need my mechila. It's okay, it worked out for the good. Since he wasn't mochel the brothers, right, thinking they didn't need mechila, then they did need kapara later on. The asara, and he was one of them, so that's what brought him to cry, that it was necessary that the asara Ruge Malchus had to die, in order to mechapra and mechiras Yosef. Had Yosef forgiven them, maybe it wouldn't have happened. Now, the only problem is like this. What?
He was the tenth one.
Right, but the Rabbanu Shlom also agreed. That's the thing. So it still doesn't make a difference. Yeah, if he had been mochel them, then there wouldn't have been anything. Everybody would have been okay. In any case, l'cha'ora, it's not true. Because there's a difference between intending to do something bad to another person and intending to do something bad to the Rabbanu Shlom. In Adam Lamakom, if I intend to eat treif, I'm rebelling against God. So there's two ideas in every Aveira. You're not allowed to rebel against God, right? Even to think about rebelling against God is an Aveira. And the actual Aveira itself. So if you intended to do bad, but you did good, you're not going to have the intrinsic effect of the Aveira, but you rebelled against God. So you need kapara. But if I intend, the Orach Chaim HaKadosh says this, right? He says, if I intend to poison you, okay, and by mistake, instead of giving you the rat poison, I gave you some extremely expensive wine, am I going to get punished? No. Because there's no isser to rebel against the person, to plot against him. The isser is to harm him. I didn't harm you. I gave you a nice expensive wine. So I don't need kapara bein adam lechaveiro. The only time this applies is bein adam lemakom, not bein adam lechaveiro. Okay. In addition, there's another reason why they didn't need kapara from Yosef, because they made a mistake. They thought they were doing something good. They thought that it was okay. They didn't think it was straight. They thought it was kosher, except they made a mistake and it was straight. And they never ate the straight, so they didn't have intention to rebel. And they didn't, what's it called, because they thought what they were doing is okay, and they, what's it called, didn't do anything wrong. So the chora, they don't need kapara at all from Yosef. So if that's the case, then what was the board? See, and the chananda. But Yosef should have told them like this. You're right. Bein adam lechaveiro, you don't need any kapara. You don't have to ask me, mechila. But lemaisa, what you thought was right was really wrong. That's called a shogeg. For that, you need mechila from the Rabbanu Shlom. By wanting to sell me, you were rebelling against God. Manavshach. If you thought it was right, you made a mistake. If you thought you were doing something wrong, you're rebelling against God. So you don't need to ask me mechila, but you need to ask the Rabbanu Shlom mechila. I don't have to be mochel you, but the Rabbanu Shlom has to be mochel. That's what he should have told them. He gave them the impression nobody has to be mochel them. So therefore, they didn't want to call ever do tshuva. They felt it was okay. Therefore, they did need mechila, and that's why the Asura Mu'i Malchus had to die.
And so if they did a proper
Beit
Din, and they followed the halachic process, and it was determined that the Din was to sell Yosef, everything was good, then it sounds like they didn't do anything wrong there.
So you save that question until next year, Parshas Vayeshev, and I'll answer it. I have an answer, but it's not for now, it's too long. Okay. In fact, if you want the answer earlier, you can find it. You can look it up in my book on Parshas Vayeshev. It's called The Anatomy of a Sale, and there it asks your question and answers it. Okay. Next. Says the Rabbanu Shlom tells Moshe Rabbeinu that they should take Nikmas B'nei Yisrael B'Midyon. To take the revenge of Klal Yisrael against Midian, because they made them sin. And the halacha is that God will hamachtio Yosef mi'ahargo. Somebody who makes you sin is worse than somebody who kills you. Because person who kills you only kills you in this world. It doesn't affect directly your olam haba. But somebody who makes you sin takes away this world and the next world. So he's much worse. Based on that, you can understand the halacha, which doesn't apply today, so don't, you know, get carried away and the, you know, Joel's not here, but for him, I have to say it doesn't apply today. The halacha is moridin v'lomayin, that if you have an apikoros, a Jewish apikoros, the halacha is that you're allowed to kill him. It's a mitzvah. And you do it in a way that, you know, nobody knows or whatever. And the Gemara gives examples. For instance, you see a guy drowning in a well. This apikoros, right? He's a college professor who spews apikoursis, right? Nice little old frail old man. Never hurt anybody, but he's an apikoros who's spewing terrible, terrible apikoursis. And is influencing young, impressionable minds and taking them off the derech. And you see him drowning in a well. And there's a ladder in the well. He's just ready to grab onto the ladder and climb out. And you say, ooh, I'm really sorry, but my kid's kite is caught in the tree, and I really need a ladder. Right? But don't worry, within 2 weeks I'll bring it back. So if you could tread water for the next 2 weeks, you know, please do so, because my kid's really crying and he needs a ladder. And I didn't realize, I just thought you were standing, you know, taking a bath. I didn't realize you were drowning. So when the police come and investigate the situation, I said, terrible thing, I really didn't realize that I was drowning. I thought he was taking a bath, and I, you know, just took away the ladder because I really needed it. And this way I won't be charged, if I can really convince the police that that was the case. And I got rid of the Russia. So, Lachora, it doesn't sound right. I mean, poor little old guy, right? What's he doing? So he's, what's it called, didn't hurt anybody per se. But if that little old guy was on the top of a building with a machine gun and grenades, shooting everybody that came inside, men, women, children, innocent people, throwing grenades into the crowd, and you tried everything, what's it called, to get him down and to stop him. Right? You sent a psychiatrist, you know, to tell him, how do you feel about throwing the grenades or whatever, you know. And that didn't work, right? He finished off that psychiatrist, you know. Right? Then you got the police guy, you know, with the bellowing thing, get off that building or whatever, and that didn't work. And then you tried every single way to get him down. You sent up a helicopter with nets, and the guy is barricaded in. There's only one way to get him off the roof. Only one way is a sniper gets on another roof and shoots him dead. And the sniper does that. Would anybody, except a bunch of radical leftists or somebody who belongs to the ACLU, right? Would anybody think that this guy is anything but a hero? He got rid of a guy who's killing hundreds of innocent people. Right? He's a hero. He's not a terrible person. He's a hero. So the same thing, if somebody is spewing spiritual bullets, killing people's neshamas, he's no less, he's even worse than that, because that this is something that's eternal damage. But we don't see it like that. So therefore, says the Chazon Ish, when did that halacha apply? When it was clear that people who did averas and people who spewed apikoursis caused havoc in the world. You could make a connection, right? Cause and effect between averas and terrible consequences. Like the Mishnah says, in time of the Beis Hamikdash, they did averas, this averas, there's a, what's it called, Batsoris came, and Rav came, right? And Milchama came. And you could see, here we're doing averas and here are these things.
Is it how about the drama, or you could kill them directly?
Moridin, no. Right. Pras is a groma. You can be Gorim, but pretty clear groma.
So you can't shoot him directly
in Mastama. Mastama, you can't shoot him directly, no. No. It says Moridin Velomayim.
That's the villain, but if he's going after
somebody. Yes, but he's not a rodei. Lemaisa, right, there's still more room than where he's mamish threatening somebody's life on the spot. The person could not listen to him or whatever.
The guy in the roof is a
rodent. Oh, the guy in the roof? No, the guy in the roof, you can shoot through the temple. That for sure. No,
that's
sure. Yeah, no, but not that's the guy in the roof. The guy in the roof
so
can shoot through the temple.
Yeah,
because you have to do Moridim V'lomayim. Now, the Chazon Ish says, in those times, when somebody shot somebody like that, it was clear this guy is a rodent. Like you said, right? He is harming people in a terrible way. And if there's no other way to get rid of him, then you try every other way. If there's no other way, this is the way. This is not the first line of action. It's the last line of action. Okay. But today, right, we don't see the correlation between averas and tsaras and tragedies. We don't see the connection. We believe it, but we don't see it. Okay. And if somebody would kill somebody like that today, what would be the reaction, even from people? Ah, that guy's a nut, right? This is deranged. Most people would not say, ah, what a kiddush Hashem. Right? Let me tell you a story. I remember in the 1960s or 70s, 60s or 70s, before the tshuva movement. So about tshuva was like, you know, a rare thing. There was a guy in Detroit who grew up in a conservative temple, and somehow he met some frum people, and he became frum. Became about tshuva. So after he became about tshuva and all fired up about Yiddishkeit, he went back one Shabbos to his conservative temple, and right smack in the middle of the rabbi's drasha, he shot him dead. Okay? Yeah, he was about tshuva. Why did he do it? Because this rabbi was misleading people like him for years, and he deserved to die. Okay. Now, I just told you the story. Okay, honestly, what was your knee-jerk thought when I said this? I'm not. No? You didn't say, wow, what a hero, he killed a conservative rabbi, right?
Right.
It could be he killed him, what's it called, because the drasha was too long. That's when I came first to Matityahu, and I get up to speak, and I see all these guys with these M16s or whatever, and I'm going on, and all of a sudden I hear clicks. You know? That made me control my the length of my drasha. In Miami, I had guys with beepers that, when it got a little long, they told their secretaries, beep me at this time, you know, what's it called, but this is a little more serious. So, in any case, so what was your, honestly, what was your knee-jerk thought? The guy's a nut, right? Nobody thought that wow, what a kiddush Hashem. He's a nut. That's how, if we see it like that, people who are not such ma'aminim see it like that. Right? And even though we could convince ourselves it's not like that, but our gut feeling, we're conditioned. The guy's a nut.
I know people at parties when Rabin was murdered. That people in the Goose, you know, they were very excited about it.
That's because it's not religion. That's politics. Yeah, I understand.
But let's say the guy was in a swimming pool, you know?
What?
Let's say the rabbi was in a swimming pool and pulled out the
ladder. Yeah. Enochanami. But still, if people heard about it, the result would be a chilul Hashem. So you want to take evil out of the world, and you're causing more evil in the world by causing chilul Hashem. That's what the Chazon says. He says, we're not on the madrega to see it properly. If you don't see it properly, then you haven't accomplished anything. And even if there are considerable amount of people who wouldn't see it properly, then you haven't accomplished anything. So that's why this halacha doesn't apply. In any case, that's why the Rabban Shem said it's nikmas Yisrael, because they were machti klal Yisrael. So the Jews have to take revenge because of what they did to you. On the other hand, when Moshe Rabbeinu tells that Israel, he says, lo kachas nikmas Hashem, it's God's revenge. Right? The Rabban Shem cares about Klal Yisrael. Look what they did terrible to you. I want you to take your revenge. Klal Yisrael says, we're willing to be mochel on our revenge, but look what they did, the chul Hashem they made, keneged the Rabban Shem. So we're taking nikmas Hashem. There's many examples in the Torah where the Rabban Shem, for instance, one, they say, the Rabban Shem refers to Pesach, right, as Chag HaMatzos. And we refer to it as Pesach. Why? Because we refer to it, because the Rabban Shem Pesach HaBatan Yisrael. The Rabban Shem refers to it as what we did. We ate matzahs, we followed him to the Midbar without taking, without getting our bread. So the Rabban Shem looks at our milas, and we look at his milas. It's a similar kind of thing. Okay, next. After this, so it says that they sent to take Nekama B'Midyan, Elef Lamata, Elef Lamata. So the simple meaning is 1,000 per tribe. 1,000 means 1,000 per tribe, just for every tribe. But there's a medrash that says, doesn't mean that. It means 2,000 per tribe. Elef Lamata, Elef Lamata. But the 2,000, each 1,000 served a different purpose. 1,000 went to fight out of each tribe. And another 1,000 were chosen to sit and learn Torah and Daven for the ones who were in the war. Because just as much as we need people to make the ishtaglis with the guns and the swords and whatever, we need people to make the histadlus to protect them and to daven that the soldier should be successful. It's a shituf pu'ula between the two. So just as much as Klal Yisrael needs an army, a physical army, they need a spiritual army too. They need the schus of Torah and tefillah in order to win. And many times in wars or in special forces activities like Entebbe, it was reported after Entebbe that before they sent those special forces to free those hostages, I think they called up, they called up some gadol and told them that there's going to be something special going on and they should instruct their Talmidim to sit and learn Torah and daven for the success of the mission. This was the secular government call. It was Begin's government anyway, so it was Rabin.
I don't believe
okay. It was supposedly reported in the secular press.
Yeah.
Paris has a lot of connections. So Paris has a lot of connections.
No, it could have been Paris. Yeah, Paris brags that he had a bracha from the Chafetz Chaim. That's why he lived. That he got a bracha from the Chafetz Chaim. I know that Dr. Lukens is close with him, and he tells me all the time what a nostalgic. I don't really buy it 100% because I know the other things that Paris says and does. But in any case, okay. In any case, whatever. So it could be, but in any case, but if it didn't happen, it doesn't make any difference to the Pasuk. So that's the way that you need a physical army and a spiritual. In fact, in Matityahu, as Avram will tell you, when we say the Mishaberach or Tzahal, we add two other phrases. We say Mishaberach Zerbaga. Yivorech es tzvo hagona liYisrael, yes kol elu shalomdim bakololim, yeshiva sakdos bakololim, shalomdim al mishmar atzim. Because really you need the shutfis between the people. We need an army, and they deserve a bracha and a tefillah 100%, no shaila. But you also need the people who are sitting and learning that they're also protecting. They're working together, hopefully, to the point where it works the other way also. During the, not the Gulf War, but during the Six-Day War, I think. The Gulf War repeated the same thing. The Shiv of Mir, during the Six-Day War, said that anybody that leaves because of the war, right, goes back to Chutzvars or whatever, should not attempt to come back to Yeshivas Mir. Why? He said, because we keep telling people that we feel that we are protecting the country or whatever, and we are the spiritual soldiers. Said, you ever see a soldier who leaves when there's a war? He's called a arik, right? Was it called a deserter, right? We don't have room for deserters in Yeshivas Mir. So, and I think Chaim Shmuel Levitz told them, you have to now learn, not just because you're learning, you have to learn as feel like you're a soldier on the front. Soldier on the front doesn't take naps, doesn't go walking around, wants to go getting a pizza. You are on the front, meaning you sit in the space medrash and you learn till you fall off your feet from exhaustion. Then you go and get a few hours sleep so you can learn again. Because you are basically the same thing as a soldier on the front. And if you don't act like a soldier on the front, then we don't need you here. And the same thing they repeated by what's it called, the Milchemes HaMifrat. Same thing. So everybody, all the yeshivas emptied out. Right, and the Rosh Yeshiva said it's ridiculous. Right, we are claiming all the time that you're the spiritual, what kind of spiritual soldiers run away when there's a war. Now we need you more than ever. Right, in fact, somebody came to Rav Scheinberg before the Gulf War and asked him what he should do. He's afraid, you know, what's it called? He's living in Yerushalayim. They weren't going to send missiles to Yerushalayim no matter what because they'd be a little bit off. They'll get the Al-Aqsa. So Scheinberg told him that, he doesn't see that it's a great danger, and stay in Eretz Yisrael. What are you going to leave Eretz Yisrael now? And Klal Yisrael in danger. You stay here with everybody else. The guy didn't listen. He went back, and he got shot on the subway in New York. So where is it dangerous? You know, to go to Chutz Laretz, you know, to recruit for the Moshav. And people in New York have not one lock on their door, but like four locks on their door, straight down the door with a big stick, what's it called, a long stick. And as they're closing the door for the night, they turn to me and say, aren't you afraid to live out there? What's it called? I said, you know what? I can't find the key to my door. We don't lock my door at night. Now we do because it got nothing, but But otherwise, we don't lock the doors at night, right? You have six lots, and you're asking me if I'm afraid to live in Bat Yitro? I said, I'd rather come to us, because you don't seem to be too safe over here. In any case, so there's a certain spiritual army that's necessary also.
Just further, I heard Rabbi Gutzman, during the wars, he told them, and it's not my head, but that he said that you should learn all that kind of thing. Sleep at night with your shoes on.
Oh, wow. Just like
all soldiers are sleeping with their shoes on, and uh-huh. They don't know where you're not going to stand, go to bed fine, you have to have your shoes on.
Okay. Same idea.
Just the Gemara that says, right, the death, what's death like, sleeping with your
shoes right.
on, so that would probably come on.
Oh, wow. Okay. But that's, if you have the right mindset, it works both ways. On the one hand, people, the secular community, or even not so secular community, right, who think everybody should be in the army and people who are learning Torah are deserters, and the firm community who say everybody should be learning Torah and there shouldn't be an army or whatever is also wrong. You need both. But you need both that understand that they work together, that they're working together. Okay. Next thing. I'm not going to get to everything I wanted to say over here. Okay, it says that the Yisem Nekiyim Hashem Yisrael. We learn from there that a person is not allowed to do something that makes him look suspicious, that people could suspect he's doing something wrong. Not only do you have to be squared away with the Rabbanu Shalom, you have to be squared away with people too. Even though what you're doing is 100% okay, if it looks bad, don't do it like that. Do it in a way that doesn't look bad. Okay, that's why the Kohen who went to count to get the Shkolin out of the Lishka didn't wear a garment with pockets. Nobody could suspect that he put something in his pockets or put something in the hem of the garment. Right? You have to be above suspicion. So Shaila's one. That from that comes the halachas of Marisayim. 100% doing something wrong, right? Why do I have to worry what people are going to say? Who cares what people say? No, you have to worry about it for two reasons. One is the obvious reason why you can't do it, because people will say, well, if he could do it, it must be okay. So, because of Marisayin, you're going to cause other people to do Averis. You're machshel them in what's it called in doing Averis, because they'll learn from you, and they'll say, well, if you can do it, I can do it too. Must be okay, right? They'll be don you the kapschos, and they'll say that you're probably doing something right, and it looks like you're doing something wrong, and they'll end up doing the same thing. For instance, an example, right? You get drenched in the rain, and you hang up your clothes to dry on the clothesline, which you're not allowed to do. People say, hey, the guy washed his clothes on Shabbos. Obviously, he held him up on the clothesline. It's okay to wash clothes on Shabbos. So he must have some kind of hector or whatever. So they'll wash their clothes on Shabbos. So they'll think it's some ways you can do it or whatever. That's one reason. Second reason is, even if they won't do what you're doing, but what will they think? You did something wrong. So you got to be done. People got schos. And if you cause somebody to be done you chalolikatschus, you're being machshel them in the aveira of the tzedek tish b'ram yisechem. You're giving them lefneiver losik and nichshol. Just like if I give a guy trait and he ends up eating it because I gave it to him, I'm over an isser of causing him to do an aveira. Here, by tempting you to judge me unfavorably, I'm causing you to do an aveira of judging me unfavorably. I'm tempting you to do that aveira. Second reason. There's a third reason though. The third reason is for my sake, because cause people to think that I did an avera. Okay, why do you have to judge people favorably? So we normally think for their sake, don't jump in conclusions about people. Look at them in a nice, favorable way. But the Maral Diskin says that it's also beneficial to the person who's doing the judging. Because if I look around and I say, hey, this guy's no good and that one's no good or whatever, I'm surrounded by people who are no good. I don't have any peer pressure to be good. Because anyway, everybody around me is worse. But if I look around and this one's a tzaddik and that one's a tzaddik, then I feel the peer pressure that if I live amongst a lot of tzaddikim, I'm embarrassed to do something wrong. So the more I don't judge people favorably, the more I surround myself with people who will not give me peer pressure to do what's right. So those are the three reasons why it's important not to make a person judge you unfavorably. One is because they may not judge you unfavorably and say, well, if you're doing it, it must be okay. And they'll end up doing something else. If they look at it and say, it's something wrong, right, and they jump to conclusions, and you're doing something wrong, I won't learn from it, but you're no good, then I was over the issue of judging you not favorably. And that affects them also, because if they judge me unfavorably, it's going to make it less pressure for them to do what's right, because they're surrounded by people who don't do what's right altogether. So from this parsha, B'nei God and B'nei Ruvain, we learn the halacha that you can't only do things. B'nei God and B'nei Ruvain meant what's it called, the Shem Shamayim. They intended to go and fight. They never intended to stay here and protect themselves. But Moshe Rabbeinu said, it looks bad. And you have to be concerned about how it looks also. And therefore, if you're not gonna, we're not going to make a tznai with you. If people don't know that it was under these conditions, then there's something wrong with it. Even if it's 100% okay, but it looks bad, it's also good. It has to look good too. It can't only be good, it has to look good also.